Disguised and infantilized, set apart from wider history alongside pirates, gladiators, knights in armor, and, I suppose, dinosaurs. The Vikings are presented as cartoon savages, who had a short-lived cameo rampaging around in the gloomy interlude between the end of Roman Britain and the Norman conquest. It does them a grave disservice. Between the conventional beginning of the Viking Age in the late 8th century and its close in the 11th, Scandinavian people and culture were involved with Britain to a degree that left a permanent impression on these islands. They came to trade and plunder and, ultimately, to settle, to colonize, and to rule. It is a story of often epic proportions, thronged with characters whose names and deeds still fire the blood and stir the imagination. Svein Forkbeard and Edmund Ironside, Ivar the Boneless and Alfred the Great, Eric Bloodaxe and Edgar the Pacifier. A story of war and upheaval. It is also, however, the story of how the people of the British Isles came to reorient themselves in a new and interconnected world, where new technologies for travel and communication brought ideas and customs into sometimes explosive contact, but which also fostered the development of towns and trade, forged new identities, and gave birth to England and Scotland as unified nations for the first time. By the time of the Norman conquest, most of Britain might justifiably be described as Viking to varying degrees, and in language, literature, place names, and folklore, the presence of Scandinavian settlers can still be felt throughout the British Isles, with repercussions for all those places that British culture and colonization have subsequently touched. The Vikings have also retained their influence as a powerful cultural force in the modern world, and representations of the Viking Age in art, music, and literature have had a profound impact on the Western imagination. Indeed, much of what we imagine when we think of this period in British history, even the word Viking itself, grew from political, literary, and artistic currents that swelled in the 19th and early 20th centuries. Here, too, a Viking Britain came alive, and, to the likes of William Morris and J.R.R. Tolkien, this was a place that seemed to lurk unseen just at the borders of their rapidly modernizing world. It was there, not only in the writings and monuments that time had preserved, but also, and perhaps especially, in the elements themselves, the grey sea, the north wind, and the very bones of the earth. In travel, art and literature, landscape became a way to commune with the people of the Viking Age. People who had seen the same red sun rising, felt the same cold wind on their necks, touched the same fissures in the smooth grey rock. This has, in turn, become a way to explore the mentality and worldview of a people with an intimate and profoundly imaginative relationship with the environment. For people living in the latter centuries of the first millennium, the landscape was teeming with unseen inhabitants and riddled with gateways to other worlds. Pits and ditches, barrows and ruins, mountains, rivers and forests, all could be home to the dead, the divine, and the diabolical, haunted by monsters and gods. Telling the story of the Vikings in Britain is therefore not a straightforward undertaking. It is the tale of a people who were not a people, who came to lands that were not yet nations. The historical record is patchy, the archaeology equivocal. Even the very words we use, Viking most of all, slither away from easy definition. It is, moreover, the story not only of the three centuries leading up to and overlapping the Norman conquest, but also of how that time has been remembered, recycled, and reimagined by successive generations. It is, as earlier generations seemed better to have appreciated, a world that is still tangible. The sense that the past is present in the landscape, that there is another world hovering.